This is a 3CR podcast.
And this is Published or Not.
People have been known to disappear at Lake Hedden. And when the lake dries up, there are discoveries to be made. So begins Michael Brissenden's latest murder mystery, Dust. So, Michael, welcome back to 3CR.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
Dust, a dry lake. The social issues behind this book are a story in themselves. Climate change, nuclear energy. What are you trying to portray here?
Well, look, you know, firstly, I just want to write a book that people enjoy reading for a start. But I think, you know, when we're writing these things, crime fiction has become a very, very popular genre. And I think for a very good reason, in that it's escapism, first and foremost, but it's also rooted in what is actually going on in our world. So we're writing fiction, but we're writing it in a contemporary setting. And when you're writing books in a contemporary setting about small towns that are busted-ass towns that are, you know, on the edge of their survival, then you have to address the issues that are circulating in our world. And that includes homelessness, the energy transition, conspiracy and corruption. So all of those things are at play.
Can we actually discuss them without violence? Because you get groups like Extinction Rebellion, which are mentioned, and that leads to violence. And this is part and parcel of where murder comes from.
Well, one of the things I did want to explore is that I do think we have entered a time where the political rhetoric has become a lot more violent, and people have a license to be much more politically aggressive than they once were. And that's because of the social media environment that we have, and also some of the pernicious media that's around that, like, you know, for instance, Sky News is on every television everywhere in regional Australia. And I think those things have actually given people license to be much more aggressive about their political language. There's not any more any real debate, you know, like we... Not to say that everybody's like this, but it has given license for some people to be much more dogmatic and aggressive about their politics.
But the feed they are getting from things like YouTube, and this affects the characters in this story, so much so that you've got this notion of sovereign citizens being raised, which is, in fact, very prescient, very topical at the moment.
Look, it is. Firstly, my... you know, heartfelt and deep condolences to anybody who's been caught up in this, what's been happening in Victoria, because it's a terrible situation. But, you know, this is the sort of natural outcome of a down the rabbit hole social media sort of online experience that leads people into conspiracy like this. And it has led some people in this direction, particularly after COVID.
Well, to bring it back then to the novel, it actually influences the nature of the characters. Mm. It influences the social interaction. So, in fact, you've got one of the detectives, Kravitz, whose daughter is politically active and breaking the law.
Exactly.
So you've got this discontinuity taking place. Mm. You've got people trying to find each other through the gaming system online. There are messages being sent this way. It's a whole other way of seeing the world.
Sure, but it's the way a lot of people are seeing the world, and it's the prism through which a lot of people do see the world now. So, like I said, I think when I'm writing these books anyway, and I think the best crime fiction at the moment is successful because it is actually talking about the sorts of things that are happening in our world without being dogmatic about it, actually giving people a good read and a good time. But, you know, you can't ignore all of these things, and that is the reality for so many people.
How would it affect the writing of a murder mystery these days?
Well, I don't think it affects it. It's just something you can't ignore. I mean, if you're putting a book in a certain place, particularly in Dust, for instance, it's in a town where the lake has dried up. The lake was a place that was a tourist destination in itself. The other industry in the town, the trucking industry, is gone. There's nothing left in the town except the threat of sort of the renewable energy transition, which is also a very divisive and anxiety-causing change in our society. So those things, you can't ignore. What is the reality for people living like
that? Well,
it's
displacing one of your main characters, Aaron Love, because he lives in the trailer park, but that's being wiped off so a battery station can be built. What does it do to local policing? Because you've got Clem Basco, who's the local officer, how effective then is his policing? What has he got to take into consideration?
Well, he's got to deal with all of this, and as he says, country policing is different. You know, so he's there are two city cops who come to investigate the murder, and he's the local one. It's a one cop town, and he's the one cop. So yeah,
and he's got to get on with the public, who are in fact being fed lots of different information. Yes. So we better get on to these characters first and foremost. Charles Goodman is the body that's been found, and he's been looking for Tobias Love, who's disappeared years earlier, which leads us then to Aaron Love. Who's Aaron? What's his...
So Aaron Love is 21 years old. He doesn't have very much in his life. He lives in a caravan park by the edge of the lake. He ekes out an existence by pulling out animals and utes from that have got stuck in the mud. And his father disappeared 2 years ago. They didn't find the body, but they found his boat and they found his ute. They never found the body. He had a terrible relationship with his father. So when the lake dried up, he thought, I'll go out and see if I can find any evidence that the guy actually has died, because no one's found the body. He doesn't find his father's body, but he finds Charles Goodman's body.
So, but what has Charles Goodman been doing?
Charles Goodman's also looking for his father, for Tobias Love. So, you know, I actually wanted to call the book Everyone's Looking for Love, but the publishers thought that might give people the wrong impression.
But then we've got Shona Telkova, who's also
looking for Tobias Love. And she came into Aaron's world the summer before this, and the lake was still there, but it was draining out at that time. But she was... she came in and weaseled her way into his life, and he has fallen head in heels in love with Shona Telkova. He will do anything for this girl. And, you know, Aaron's a very sort of straight up and down 21-year-old guy who, you know, he wants her and he wants to have a nice life, you know. But he's happy with his existence, even though it's a pretty hard, tough existence.
Pretty simple existence. Yeah, simple, but. Yeah. The mystery then builds as all of these people are starting to look for Tobias Love, but who had previously disappeared. Into this picture then, Martin Kravitz and Senior Constable Fiona Weldon, who don't necessarily get on with Clem Basco, the local sergeant. Martin Kravitz, a flawed character in some ways, or broken?
Yeah, he's broken. When you're writing crime fiction, you inevitably have to deal with police. And I love writing cops because cops spend 20, 25, 30 years seeing things every day that would send most people, if they saw them once, to a PTSD clinic. And after all this period in time, you can't help but get, you know, he's been in the force for 20 odd years. He's cynical. His relationship with his wife is broken up. He has been sidelined to a desk while they investigate an incident where he and his partner went to a crime scene. There was a shootout. And the bullet that killed his partner was his bullet, but it was complete chaos that day, and he certainly never intentionally shot him. But he's been sidelined while this investigation goes on, and then he's moved to organised crime, and that's how he ends up doing this investigation. But he is a very, you know, he's a cynical, older cop who's seen everything. He's been around, and he may have had some idealism when he was younger, but a lot of that's been bashed out of him now. And he has teamed up with a very young female detective called Fiona Weldon, who, unlike Kravitz, who grew up in a working-class family, immigrant family in Western Sydney, Fiona Weldon grew up in a genteel terrace house in inner Melbourne and learnt the cello and...
Shakespeare.
And went to Melbourne University and was expected to go on to become a lawyer or something like that, follow the path of her parents. And she decided she wanted to... she didn't want to be pulling people up from a position of privilege. She wanted to be down with them, pushing them up from the bottom. And so policing was where she went, but she is a very idealistic. And the two of them clash, but they also recognise in each other. He recognises her idealism and he knows where it's going to go. And she looks at him and goes, oh, I'm not sure I want to go there, but I don't know how I can avoid it.
And they've both got to deal with the local sergeant.
That's right.
Clem
and
Basco.
They have to deal with the local sergeant, who is someone completely, completely different.
We actually then get other people disappearing. Danny, the local bartender, is the next body that's found. And Arkady Feingold as well, who owned the transport company that used to run out of the town. So there's something else going on behind the scenes.
There's a broader story about entrenched corruption, and This is centred on a trucking company, a fake trucking company called Fine Gold, which is basically being used to run drugs and human trafficking, and they have basically a criminal network which is used to support the legitimate business. So that's where the Fine Gold factor comes in, and of course, inevitably, all of it connects towards the end.
Well, it connects in a variety of ways. I think we can say there is a shootout, so which echoes what Kravitz has been through before. So will it happen again? But also, we do get an understanding of where all of these bodies come from, the whys and wherefores and the disappearances. But the resolution goes also to a fact that there is no resolution, in that basically then he sees them. Black dots in the rearview mirror. He watches them loom up slowly behind them. Four of them again. He turns the music off. Zaidi looks at him, realises there's something wrong. Dad? She follows his eyes from the mirror, turns her head to the rear. They're four abreast now behind them, riding close. Easy riders, black leather, those old military-style half-helmets, faces hidden behind beards and dark glasses. Two move out, roll up alongside the car. The other two stay back. They don't make eye contact, just sit there, engines thumping. Dad, is everything okay? I don't know, Zips. Just stay calm, okay? Oh, shit. Zadie puts her knees up to her chest, curls into herself. The bikes stick with them for 3 or 4 kilometres, then pull away. Patriots. Point made. So, basically, the perpetrators of a lot of this, or the people involved in a lot of the criminal activity, still remain.
Yeah, nothing's really resolved in the end, except that, this idea that, one crime can be solved and corruption is resolved is not, it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. Right? We find out why we've lost Charles Goodman and the history of the disappearances and the other bodies that have turned up. Mm. But the force at play behind it all still exists,
yes,
still
exactly,
has to be
exactly,
dealt with.
Exactly.
So if you were still reporting for Four Corners, what would you say about the nature of society and the environment we've got today, which I think this book brings out?
Look, I think we're in a very anxious moment, actually. I think the world geopolitically is very unstable, and that's upsetting a lot of people. I think the sorts of changes that are being forced on us for various reasons through having to deal with the climate situation, the challenges that are put up at the moment for a lot of people, including housing is a classic one, right? There are so many things. There's the energy transition. There's, people talk about the housing crisis as being a crisis of Sydney and Melbourne. It's not. It's a crisis, a national crisis that's affecting regional towns harder in some ways than the big cities. And I think people are generally very anxious about where the world is going and what our place in it is and what we can do to actually control it.
And this can bring out violence.
Of course it can.
As well.
And it brings out all sorts of responses. But one of those responses also is people looking for answers in places that take them to some pretty nasty
dark places.
Conclusions.
Well, the book is called Dust. It's a follow-on from Smoke, the author Michael Brissenden, and it's from Affirm Press. So, Michael, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, and now we have your interview. And hold it.
I hope I've got Fiona Lowe on the line.
You have. Hello.
Well, Fiona Lowe is a prolific author and writes just as many books as there are dysfunctional families. You've just published another one to add to your library. Fiona Lowe, how many books do you think you've written?
I think The Drowning is 39.
Woo-wee! And it's very current. Michael Brissenden was just talking about the housing crisis, and there is a house in dispute in The Drowning, isn't there?
There absolutely is. There's a multi-generational family holiday house with an absolute beach frontage down on the coast, affectionately known as the Shack. And a big, large extended family has holidayed there for years. Wonderful memories. You know, they all were teenagers in the dunes, first relationships, Pictionary games, all sorts of competitive things, wonderful summers. But now the older people have passed away, and four adult siblings and a third cousin have discovered that the shack has been left to them.
Now, I'm just going to stop you right there because I've just come back from the holiday house, the family holiday house, and two houses down from us, this is exactly what happened. It's been left and all the adult people are there, but a lot of the other cousins don't go to holidays there anymore. So this one said, right, we've got to sell it. So she's put this most incredible price on the holiday house. So nobody can buy it, so she has to continue holidaying there. But that's the story down the road. This is not what happened in your story, the drowning.
Well, what happened in my story is, because we have adult siblings and a third cousin, we have four adults with four or five adults with very different opinions about what they want to do, plus they've all got partners who all weigh in. So basically, someone wants to sell it because down the coast is just starting to take off. People, the PFMs, the people from Melbourne, have just discovered it. And so, you know, a few of them are looking at, you know, dollar signs. Some others want to pull it down and build a purpose-built holiday house that then can be rented out. And a few of them want to keep it as is, because life is so complicated and they want to relive their childhood and introduce their children to it, the simple life. So, yeah, things get a bit tricky, and you would think that inheriting a beach house with absolute beach frontage would be perfect, but the book actually opens with a dead body, so maybe things aren't quite as perfect.
Which brings us to, I know you're busy with book launches for this book, but it's this whole idea of feuding and fatal families that you'll be speaking about tomorrow night.
That's right, at the Sisters in Crime with three other authors. We've got Tanya Scott, who brought out Stillwater, her debut novel, with Alan and Unwin last year, and Kirsten McDermott with her novel What the Bones Know, which is kind of a gothic, contemporary gothic, apparently. And, yes, and we're being interviewed by another author, and we're going to be talking about, when things in families go worse than bad.
Lynn Yout is that other author, and she was on the program last year with her book The Hollow Girl, which was an incredible read about a laundry, like the Abbotsford Convent set in out of... So, look, all these families, the institution of the family and its criminal complexity. So this is going to be run tomorrow night by Sisters in Crime.
That's correct, at the Rising Sun Hotel in South Melbourne.
Right. And just tell us a little bit about what you know about the Sisters in Crime.
I joined after I wrote The Accident a couple of years ago. It's a fabulous organisation that promotes female crime authors in Australia. Well, I mean, I believe there's chapters overseas, but yeah, this is... I go to the Victorian events. They have some fantastic things. They often have these panels, and you can go along just to the panel, or you can go earlier and have dinner and socialise with keen writers and readers. One of my favourite things that they do every year during Law Week, and I always go to this one in Melbourne, is they normally get a panel together of past judges, forensic pathologists, detectives, and pick a topic. And gosh, I've got some absolute gold from those chats that have landed up in books, especially for the drowning.
Well done, you. Yeah, there's over, I was surprised, 4,000 members of Sisters in Crime now. And they put out a newsletter, Stab in the Dark. And they also organise the Davitt Awards for Best Crime Books by Australian Women.
That's right. And the Red Stiletto, or the Stiletto Awards for Unpublished Manuscripts. So, yeah, they're absolute powerhouse in promoting female crime fiction in this country.
And the delight that four of those past Davitt women have gone on to be shortlisted in America's Mystery Writers. And this is the 80th year of the annual Edgar Allan Poe Awards. So four of our women have gone to go into that. Yeah, in the newsletter, they've also got the author blog, the author spotlight, Murder Monday, and Crime Stack and Reviews. And they have news of crime novels, which I think is really interesting. A book published by Vicky Petratis, that's being made into a movie.
It is, yeah, coming up.
Sarah Bailey's The Dark Lake, which introduced readers to that detective Gemma Woodstock, who rides a Harley, doesn't she, or one of those. Well, it's been well written about, translated in other countries. Now, it's currently in development for a TV series on Stan next year.
And
Tony Jordan, who doesn't always write detective, but she's got her book, one of her books out called, made into a movie right now, playing Addition, which is all about...
Yeah, that was her debut novel. Yeah. That was her debut novel. I remember reading that many years ago.
Well, I just saw it, and it's pretty darn good.
Obsessive. Yeah, the book was a corker.
Yeah, obsessive compulsive woman likes to do additions. And I liked her, you know, that the voice in her head was that of Tesla. So this very...
Yes, Nikola Tesla, not the car.
Oh, yes, of course.
But people say Tesla these days and it's like, oh, you're talking about the car. But, yeah, no, the mathematician, Nikolai. Was it Nikola Tesla? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And Sisters in Crime also list opportunities and competitions and workshops. And have you ever taken advantage of one of these, Fiona Lowe?
Well, as I said, I always go to the Law Week panel, absolutely, and I always come away with
ideas,
a great piece of information, to be able to have access to be able to chat to a forensic pathologist or a detective. You know, that's pretty special.
Oh yes. And, after 39 books, you really don't need to apply for something like the Wheeler Centre's Hot Desk Fellowship.
No, I'm a bit of a... I'm afraid I wouldn't cope with that at all. I need complete silence and my own setup. Absolutely hopeless. None of my books have ever been written in a cafe. I just end up eavesdropping on all the conversations around me and getting absolutely nothing done. So...
But for those writers out there who aren't as prolific as you, there's also the Allen and Unwin Crime Fiction Prize, advertised as A Killer Opportunity Awaits. So that's for a publishing contract. And something I think that's just the weirdest one I've ever heard of, Writers on Ice. You write your book and then you go ice skating. Oh, dear. But it's also the State Library, too, that offer one, which I really like the idea of. They have Writers Victoria, which offer courses, but they also have a travel fund. Have you ever travelled anywhere, Fiona Lowe, to get ideas?
I've travelled many places, and I do travel for the books that I write. But what I normally find, because I'm in the fortunate position of being contracted, there's never enough time to apply for the fund for the book. Like, it's a timing thing. But talking about Writers Victoria, I'm not sure that you're aware that they have in fact lost their funding through the Victorian government, and there's a huge petition anyone who is passionate about the creative arts in Victoria and is a Victorian needs to sign, because there is every chance we will lose Writers Victoria if we don't do something about it.
Is this what they've done with the State Library? They are threatening the State Library, and now they're sort of threatening other bits of the State Library.
Well, they did not get the Writers Victoria, which actually operates out of the Wheeler Centre, didn't get its funding renewed. So it depended largely on the Victorian government providing funding through the arts funding, and it was declined.
Thank you for making us aware of that, because that's something I hope, you know, all writers or all readers will do something about.
Yeah, so there is a petition online because at the moment, come June 30, Writers Victoria's future is got a big question mark over the top of it.
Well, now I'm going to just dive into Writers of the Past. And this is something that's going to connect Fiona Lowe, myself, and co-presenter David McLean, because the Doll Trilogy, now I must have seen it years ago put on by Melbourne Theatre Company, but you've just seen it recently.
Ray Lawless, fantastic Doll Trilogy. Yeah, he wrote Summer of the 17th Doll, and that changed Australian theatre forever, because it was the first play that had ever been that portrayed working class Australians. And then he actually wrote the other two a decade later. So, yes, and we were very excited that the Red Stitch Theatre Company did it as part of their 25th anniversary. And so Saturday was a great day. The first play was at 12 o'clock and we finished it. The third play finished it at 5 to 11. It was an awesome day of theatre.
I'm about to go and see it this weekend. So,
oh, are you?
Yes.
Well, we're from Geelong, so we have to travel up. So we brought a little table and our picnic chairs and some bubbles and but they fed us in between sandwiches and lamingtons.
Yeah, you need to be fortified.
Yeah. Then we wandered down to Chapel Street and had a lovely dinner and came back and no, it was right out of the box. It was amazing. And Caroline, I mean, they were all excellent, but Caroline Lee, oh my God, she was just phenomenal as the mother. She truly was.
Well, we've covered some distance, haven't we, Fiona? We've covered your book, The Drowning, what you're doing tomorrow night with Sisters in Crime, and just the broad thing of Sisters in Crime. And I've got to say, it's not just for women. They do have an area called Brothers in Law.
That's right. It's clever, isn't it?
And men are always invited to their socials. Well,
and
Fiona,
I'm assuming that there's still some tickets available if people wanted to jump onto the Sisters in Crime website for the. It's tomorrow night at 6:30 for the dinner. But if you just wanted to come to the panel, that's 8 o'clock.
If you read crime or write crime, it's a good thing to be part of, isn't it, Sisters in Crime?
That's right. And the Rising Sun Bookshop will be there with our books. And if you did come, you'll be able to get The Drowning 3 days before it actually goes on release, which is next Tuesday. But you can buy it on Friday night.
Thank you very much, Fiona.
Along with Tanya Scott and Kirsten McDermott. So thanks for having me. It was lovely to chat.
Thanks very much, Fiona Lowe. Thank you.
And that takes us out for another week, Jan, although we should get in a message quickly about subscribing.
Well, missing something on 3CR? 3CR has over 50 weekly podcasts, published or not being one of them. And our Radio On Demand feature allows you to listen back to any of your favourite shows whenever you like via the Community Radio app or our website.
And now it's time for Resonant Frequency Radio. You've just been listening to Published or Not on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.